Good morning, everyone. Greetings in Jesus' name this morning, and welcome to each of you here. We're so glad again to have some visitors, and an extra special welcome to you and everybody that's here on a kind of a chilly, nasty day outside. It's wonderful to be together and be able to worship together. I'm going to start off with a question. Does God reward faith? We talked about it a little bit in our Sunday school this morning, and I really enjoyed that discussion. Does God reward faith? If he does, what does that reward look like? I'd like to look at some thoughts on that a little bit this morning. I'm going to be reading some verses out of Matthew chapter 9, but before we get into that, I'm going to tell you a little story that happened, some of it might still be happening, I'm not sure, to me, a number of years ago, it was before I was married. I don't remember how many years ago it was exactly, but 10, 12 years, something like that probably. Those of you who have grown up doing chores, feeding cows, especially if you feed hay, know the struggle that comes with cutting hay bales, like cutting the strings for hay bales when you're feeding them, whether it's square bales or round bales. One of the things that I've often fought with as I feed hay on a cold morning is getting a knife that works well, because I can have a pocket knife that I have to take my gloves off to work because I can't open the blade properly, or, you know, I don't want a great big long knife flopping around inside the tractor, and, you know, it just can be kind of a pain. And I have lost many knives doing chores because I would, you know, cut the bales and I would stick it in my pocket and my fat gloved hands would fumble it and it would fall on the ground somewhere, and I would get to the next place and knife was missing and I had no idea where it was, or I would leave it in a tractor or farm truck or something somewhere. And one day I found the perfect chore knife. It was about this long. It wasn't very big. It had a fixed blade, and it had a sheath with these two webbing things on them that were Velcro that I could attach to the seat of the tractor, and on the top, so the knife was always right there. I didn't have to worry about fumbling it in and out of my pocket. On the top of the knife, there was a little, like a lanyard hole, but it was pretty big. It was big enough I could put a big loop of not just string, but like some rope around it that a fat gloved hand could fit through. And I could just, it was always there in the tractor. It worked perfectly. Oh, I just loved that knife. Every morning when I went out to do chores, I would just feel good because I had this good knife to cut hay bales with. Well, my absent-mindedness struck again in spite of, you know, all these fail-safes that I had in place. I had cut the strings for a round bale. It was over a bale feeder. And normally I would just run my hand through that lanyard and just leave the knife dangling as I pulled the strings off. But this morning, for some reason, I had decided not to do that. I was just holding the knife. And when I cut the strings and was getting ready to pull them off, I needed something to do with the knife. And so I stuck it in the hay bale, pulled the strings off, got that all taken care of, climbed in the tractor, dumped the hay bale into the hay ring, and went off to the next farm, hopped out, reached for my knife, and it was gone. And I remembered instantly where it was. Oh, no. I churned back for the other farm as fast as I could go. I got a chase. The cows, of course, had swarmed that bale instantly and chased them away. I got a pitchfork and a shovel, and I went through that hay bale praying madly the whole time. But I was pretty sure that I was going to find it because I had a lot of faith that was going to happen. And guess what? I didn't. I did not find that knife. I went back to that bale ring. I don't know how many times I would go back. I'd go to work. I'd come back in the evening. I'd go out there with a pitchfork. That knife was very special to me. And couldn't find it. Years went by, and I would still search for that knife. Whenever I was out there, I thought, well, you know, maybe this will be the day. And I'd pray about it and think, you know, this will be the time. And went out there, and one day I went out there, and I was actually praying about something else. There was some other big decisions that were happening in my life at the time, and I was and just some other things, and I was praying about that, and I thought, you know what would be really neat is if I would find this knife today. So I went out there, and I thought, you know, that's actually kind of silly. Pray for a knife. God doesn't care about my little knife, you know, especially when I've got these other big issues that really need prayer more. But I thought, you know, Lord, that'd be really nice if you'd help me find this knife today. And I went out there, and I looked, and guess what? I didn't see the knife anywhere. That's what. So was my faith rewarded? Well, I'd like to read this passage here in Matthew chapter 9. I'm going to read verses 27 through 31. And the title of my devotional this morning is Faith to Follow. Matthew chapter 9, verses 27 through 31. And when Jesus departed thence, two blind men followed him, crying and saying, Thou son of David, have mercy on us. And when he was come into the house, the blind men came to him, and Jesus saith unto them, Believe ye that I am able to do this? They said unto him, Yea, Lord. Then touched he their eyes, saying, According to your faith, be it unto you. And their eyes were opened, and Jesus straightly charged them, saying, See that no man know it. But they, when they were departed, spread abroad his fame in all that country. This story comes right after a more well-known set of stories, which was Jesus healing a woman who had the issue of blood and also bringing a little girl back to life. All the Gospels except for John have those two stories in it, but this is the only Gospel that has this story of these two blind men. And I was thinking about that, wondering what was it about this that Matthew thought was important. And there's just some lessons that I'd like to pull out of these verses. The first one is that the blind men heard and they believed. And I'd like to take a moment to process that. They didn't see any of these miracles. They had no proof that these miracles had happened. They heard about it, but that's all they knew. They could not verify it for themselves because they couldn't see. And I'm from the show me state, and I like to see things. I like to have things verified. I tend to be kind of skeptical. Something comes in email that looks like it's from a Nigerian prince, and I get skeptical. I have to see the money before I'm going to send somebody my credit card information. And these men, they heard about this, and they were ready to charge off in search of healing. And then I see that they follow Jesus in the faith that they would be healed. And it's stories like this that I think give rise to that cliche, blind faith. These men didn't even know where they were going. All they knew is that they were following Jesus, and they were hoping for healing in that. They were taking steps in faith even when they didn't know where those steps were going. And that's something that is difficult for me. How far do I need to see before I'm willing to follow? My tendency is to try to figure out a path to its logical conclusion and then say, okay, so this path is going where I want to go. Yeah, I'll follow Jesus on that path because I like where that one's going. Well, what if I don't know where that path is taking me? Am I still willing to follow Jesus? That's what these men did. They didn't know where Jesus was going. They simply knew they had to follow him in order to get healing. And I had to think of that as I thought through my tendency. It's not faith if I know the outcome. If I knew where that path was going, it's not faith if I follow Jesus there. The faith happens when I don't know the outcome, when I don't know where he's going. And that's one of the great challenges that I draw from this passage, is that thought of being content to follow Jesus right now. Following him in faith that he'll heal me. Realizing that actually being close to Jesus is the important thing. And being okay with the reward for my faith, if you want to call it the reward, simply being that I can be close to Jesus and that I can continue to follow. I also see that the men followed Jesus until he stopped. It says they went all the way to the house. Jesus went into the house and they followed him right on inside. How far was that? Well, not exactly sure in these stories in Mark, when he says that after Jesus had raised this little girl back to life, he went back to his own place, back to Nazareth. And so we don't know how much time passed in between there. But if he would have gone all the way back to Nazareth immediately afterwards, and these men would have followed him all the way there, that was over 20 miles. Now, it may have just been down the street. We don't know that. But either way, it was the same distance as far as these blind men were concerned, because they didn't know where it was, you know, how far Jesus was going. But they followed him until he stopped. And that's another thing that's tough for me. When I want answers to my prayers, or when I want direction in a decision that I'm trying to make, or a confirmation, I really want Jesus to deal with these promptly. I really would like some kind of a confirmation relatively soon that I'm doing the right thing, or praying the right way even. And continuing is hard. Following Jesus until, if you will, until he stops and faces me. Now, was Jesus ignoring these men when they went down the street just hoping they would go away? I don't think he was. I think maybe he was giving them a chance to feel their own resolve. This was something more for the blind men than it was for Jesus. Giving them the opportunity to know in and of themselves that they were doing what they could to follow him. And yet, when they actually did, when they followed through and they came right into where Jesus was sitting, what did he do? He said, "Now, do you guys believe?" You know, if that would have been me, I would have felt a little bit offended. Well, yeah, I mean, I couldn't see where I was going, and I followed you all the way back to the house here, and I've been, you know, this wasn't easy. I'm blind. I had to rely on other people to help me and stuff, and I mean, clearly I believe, because I did all this stuff. Why did Jesus require a verbal confirmation? Well, you know what? I think one reason is because, believe it or not, sincere words are some of the hardest things for us to do, for us to say. Now, I've heard many times people say, you know, growing up, particularly fathers, you know, my father never really said much that he loved me. I felt it, you know, his deeds showed it, but he never really said it. Why didn't he say it? It's because it was hard. When you say something, you make yourself vulnerable in a way that goes beyond simply your actions. And that is because you are now required to live up to what you just said, which is one reason it's so scary to be a preacher. So I think that's one reason that Jesus asked them to say it, because he was now requiring them to continue to live up to what they were already doing. And so I think that's an important point. And interestingly enough, studies also show that when we say something, it does something for us. When you hear yourself say something, your brain says, "Oh, that's important. It was important enough that I said it out loud," and it cements it there, which is another reason, as if you need any more, why it is important to give testimonies. Because hearing yourself say something cements in your own mind that it's important. Amen. But then I see that says healing happened according to their faith. What would have happened if one of them would have stayed on the outside of the house and he would have been just a little bit too shy to go in? He said, "You know, I've come all this way," and he just went in the house, "and I think I'm just going to hang back. You know, you go on in if you want to, and I'll, you know, I'll see what he does to you. And if that's good, then I'll go in." How often do I do that kind of thing? Or what if they had gone in there and Jesus said, "Well, do you believe?" And they said, "You know, we just showed you that we did. You know, clearly you're not going to do anything for us." Would they have gotten blurry vision, you think? Or gotten vision back in one eye? I don't know. But it remains that Jesus said, according to your faith, you're going to be healed. And they were healed. So they had the faith. And then Jesus told them not to spread word of this miracle. You think it's because he was tired and wanted a rest? He didn't want to heal anybody else. He didn't want anybody else hearing about it. Do you think maybe it was a test of their sincerity to see, you know, how committed they were? What would you have done if Jesus would have miraculously healed you and then said, don't tell anybody? What would I have done? Well, I know myself well enough to know what I would have done. I would have gone and told people and say, hey, you're not really supposed to tell anybody, but... or told a few of my close friends. And well, you know, I think that Jesus intended this statement to be self-defeating because it would have been impossible to conceal the fact that they could see. Somebody somehow had to help them get to this house. There was no way they could just walk there easily before. When they came back out, they didn't need that anymore. It was impossible to conceal. So I think that's part of what Jesus was saying is, you're not going to have to tell anybody what happened here because they're going to see it. And I think by telling them that they shouldn't tell anyone, Jesus was showing the power of the miracle. It didn't need anybody to tell it because it spoke for itself. And it's the same way when Jesus works in our lives. And they were unable then to contain their joy. And they went out with seeming abandon and spread the word, totally overflowing with what had happened. And that's the true result of one who is transformed by God. The story tells itself, yet the one who is changed cannot help but tell it right along with it. And a lesson in that for me is to normalize spiritual conversations. Talk about answered prayer as much as I talk about trucks. I don't talk about trucks much, so I better say something else. I think that spiritual conversations should be a normal for us. In this lesson, I see that one of the great miracles was not only that there was healing, but that there was dedicated faith that led to the healing. They weren't guaranteed that they would be healed as they stumbled along crying for mercy, but they knew they were following Jesus, and that was enough. The story I was telling you about my knife that day I went out there and looked for it. I was praying earnestly about other things, and I did not see my knife. But what I did see, let's see if I can see what I saw. Yeah, what I saw was this. Can you see that? I saw a little piece of rope poking out of a big pile of dirt. We had this. Remember, this was years later. We had every year when we are done feeding hay, we scrape the manure away and spread it on the fields, and then the mud we scrape onto a pile and make a nice solid base for the next year. And sticking out of that pile of mud that had been gone over how many times, a cow, it had rained a day or two before, and a cow had stepped on top of that pile. And I saw a little bit of a rope poking out of there. So I went and I pulled on the rope, and guess what came out? It was my knife. Years later, I've never used this knife since then. It's not the same. I don't know if it could cut a bale anymore. It's the blade was pretty rusted. I cleaned it up as best I could without grinding it down. But this knife stays in my den now. Because the other things I was praying about, I have not seen an answer to those prayers. And I still pray about them. But I keep this knife in my den as a reminder to me, as a confirmation that even when it doesn't feel like God hears prayers, he still hears prayers. And that maybe the lesson in this is not that my prayer is answered, but that I stay close to God, that I have a faith that can follow God even when I don't know where it's going to lead me.